Hello, everybody. Thank you, Ricky, for having me. I want to talk today about the most significant crisis in current urban design. It lies not in our inability to design innovative buildings, but in our inability to design a good mechanism for decision-making about what to build. The architects are way ahead of the lawyers, political scientists, and politicians in their creativity and their ability to think through design problems. This is true not only in the United States and the UK, but in many other areas in the world. I don't intend to talk today about the primary example of this, the mismatch between where the metropolitan population lives and the fragmentation of metropolitan government. I want to focus instead on what I see as two other problems of urban decision-making here in London. The first is, we've lost our ability to figure out whom to give decision-making authority to. Neither the government, the public sector, nor business, the private sector, can be trusted to make decision-making about the transformation of urban life. The instinct, therefore, is to merge the public and the private in ways that I'll describe. This sleight of hand about the public-private distinction has produced a second problem. It's helped guide the kind of development that's taking place here, generating a momentum to concentrate on building a globalized business environment, a comfortable place for the upper middle class to live, work, and shop. Admittedly, in every one of the thoughtful reports issued by the Deputy Prime Minister, the Greater London Authority, the London Development Agency, the English Partnerships, there's always a lot of concern expressed right at the beginning about social exclusion, poverty, and affordability, and equality. But given the current decision-making structure, building a city based on these concerns takes a back seat to building a globalized business environment. The first source of this policy is the collapse of the public-private distinction. Once upon a time, there was something called government, and people thought that government, democratically elected officials and their appointees, should have the ultimate responsibility for urban decision-making. Nowadays, government has gone out of fashion. It's been replaced with words like governance, along with public-private partnerships, stakeholders, and urban development corporations. What's new in this new vocabulary is not that government is working with the private sector to accomplish its objectives. Government has always depended on the private sector for much of what it sought to accomplish, particularly depending on it as a source of revenue and investment. What's new is that government no longer feels capable of being the decision maker. It now needs to come to a consensus with others, with corporations, interest groups, communities, stakeholders. Who are these people? Who is a stakeholder? Which corporations and interest groups count? Who is included in the concept of community? It's important to recognize that there's no uncontroversial answer to any of these questions. It's also important to recognize that none of these institutions and groups are citizens of the UK. Only individuals, only human beings, not institutions and groups, can be citizens. Only individuals can vote. Institutions and groups, however, can share decision-making power. That is, they can become stakeholders, participate in governance, and be appointed to the boards of urban development corporations. This kind of public-private merger is taking place on a large scale in the UK, in the European Union generally, in the United States, and around the world. In the UK, urban decision-making seems to rest above all on a single word, a word repeated so often on every page, in every report, that it is, quite frankly, overwhelming. That word is partnership. Everyone, it seems, is a partner with everyone else here in London. The national government is a partner with the Greater London Authority, and it in turn is a partner with the boroughs and the surrounding municipalities. All of these partners are also partners with businesses and other stakeholders, and the stakeholders are all partners with each other. Community groups, trade unions, voluntary organizations, organizations representing the disabled, young people, gays and lesbians, they're partners too. But not all partners are equal. The word partnership has a vague feel-good quality, but partnership is a businessman's word. It suggests a world without politics. In the business world, we don't have political conflict. We have cooperation. We're all on the same team, working together on our common objectives, because we need each other. The government can't possibly finance the infrastructure and development it needs, and the private sector can't invest in major projects without the cooperation of the government. This structure produces public deference to business decision-making in the hopes that business decision-making will become more public-spirited. The public becomes more private, and the private is expected to be more public. This merger has become attractive because both sides share a common idea of the city's future. The goal is gentrification. We should say it frankly. If property values in disadvantaged neighborhoods go up, our policy is working. Given this vision, many of the other partners have only a secondary role. They need to be listened to, mollified, accommodated. Efforts are made to provide affordable housing, improve public transportation, and protect public space. Sometimes these secondary partners make helpful suggestions that are embraced, but often they're seen as obstructions to progress, as a hurdle to be overcome. This lesser role is solidified by two different conceptual frames, frames I'll call the dynamic defensive and the wide narrow distinctions. Economic development in the style of globalization is dynamic. It's on the move, whether you like it or not, and it's going to transform not only London, but the world. Globalization is the future, and you better get with the program. By contrast, the boroughs, the trade unions, the so-called equality groups, are trying to hold their own against this onslaught. This is particularly true with what the literature calls community. The word community is another vague romantic word with no particular meaning. Integral part of the city's economic development.
Sorry.
Do we need this?
Yes.
Do we have an architectural vision of the city that makes these the foundational concepts of designing the built environment? These are big questions, and no organizational reform is going to work unless we answer them. But I want to concentrate here on the decision-making process. We need a decision-making process that transforms the richness of the urban population of London from being positioned as neighborhood-based and defensive to becoming part of the city's dynamic development. To do so, we need to revive the notion of the public in public decision-making. We should take the people of London out of the community and put them into the city. This does not mean that business has no role in economic development. Of course it has a role. It means that ultimately the decision maker has to be democratically responsible. It also doesn't mean that we should slow things down. In fact, neighborhood opposition and central government oversight are now the primary contributors to slowing things down. An empowered public decision-making process properly designed could make things faster by making public decision-making more legitimate. Changing the current structure requires institutional innovation. On this score, London is way ahead of many other cities. There are also already many institutional innovations here, and my proposal can build on one of them, the Greater London Authority. The Greater London Authority is a citywide organization democratically elected. It could be given more power by the national government to speak for the city than it has now. But the legitimacy of that increased power depends on its ability to incorporate into its decision-making process the striking diversity of the city's population. And that, in turn, suggests a rethinking of the structure not only of the London Development Agency, but of its legislative branch, the Assembly. The Assembly now has a very limited role, but it could be transformed into a democratic vehicle for formulating alternatives to the current embrace of the public-private partnership. We at the Urban Age often talk about the impact of a city's physical development on its social development. What I'm emphasizing is the reverse. Social development should have an impact on the organization of a city's urban planning process, and thereby on the nature of its physical development. Thank you.